With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Right, well, I am absolutely delighted to be joined by Mr. Ed Slater.
I'm good, thanks, JB. Thanks for having me on the show.
No problem at all. So, end of season. Have you been away? What have you been up to?
Well, I've been down in Salcombe for a week with the 12 trees.
But oh, really?
We had our third child about a month ago, so the idea of going abroad is a scary one, so we're staying in the country for now.
Nice, and also congratulations.
Cheers.
Boy, girl?
It's a boy, so I had two girls to start off with, and then the third and final is a boy, so...
Now,
yeah, delighted to finish there.
Now, have you got ambitions for a young rugby player there?
To be honest with you, I haven't really thought that far ahead, but I want to get him into sport. Our eldest, she's pretty decent with a tennis racket, so I think she'll go down that route. But I'll certainly be pushing him down the local rugby club. But I think I wasted about 16 years of my life playing football, so before I realised how good it was down at a local rugby club. So yeah, I'll be taking down there when he's old enough.
Is that right? So were you a footballer before you got into rugby?
Oh, completely football obsessed. Yeah, completely football obsessed. And then I went to a school that was we played like one rugby game a year.
Yeah,
and it was kind of the typical stuff, like your fastest blokes on the wings and all of that. So I never really played. I was just pure football, and then I got to about 16 and realised I wasn't going to be good enough. So a mate of mine who kind of played at Milton Keynes for a long time, he persuaded me to go down there, and I never really looked back.
Is that where you're from then, originally?
Yeah, I'm born in Leicester, but I grew up in Milton Keynes. Yeah, the kind of... middle of nowhere town, really, like nothing really reports from Milton Keynes, does it? So
it's
a great place to grow up, to be honest with you.
Isn't Milton Keynes designed in grids and they claim it's a similar way to New York?
It's based on an American city. I can't remember which one, but it is, yeah, it's all grid system. But when I grew up there, I obviously didn't really know any different. So ever since I kind of come out of that bubble, everyone goes to me, what the hell is going on in Milton Keynes? I've been there, I've got no idea where I'm going, what's going on, where anything is. But obviously, coming from there, you're not really aware of that.
See, that really surprised me, because when I think of Leicester, I think of like the most traditional of rugby hotbeds. But I also think they kind of get their players from the same sort of places, like everyone's from Uppingham School or Oakham or some such thing, or they've been immersed in the game from age of two.
Yeah.
In fact, I actually think that everyone's like Sam Vesty, like three generations deep.
Well, Hinkley skin.
Yeah, quite.
There's a handful of them. Yeah, like Sammy Harrison's still a good Hinkley skin. You look at Norfolk as well. They get a lot of players from Norfolk, and
they do actually, don't they? Because that's one of their
kind of catchment areas, and quite often you see a lot of good players come out of there. I mean, some of them speak for themselves, like the Youngs brothers, for example. But few of the younger guys coming through now there, like Harry Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
He comes from the same local club as the Youngs brothers, and I think he's going to be a real prospect.
So when did you first get in contact with Leicester Tigers then? Was it directly to Leicester Tigers that you went from, like, your club rugby?
No, so what happened was I obviously I finished finished football and went down to Milton Keynes, and I had no idea what was going on or how to play the game. And I just played there for a couple of years and had a laugh and did the usual stuff that the local rugby clubs did. Went on tour to Holland, and it was just I was just having a good time playing rugby. And then I got to the end of school, and I didn't do too well. And I was working in a call centre.
Really?
And my friend, who was painting and decorating at the time, said, oh, I don't think I can do this for another year. So we'd saved up a little bit of money, and we decided we were going to play a bit of club rugby in Australia. And we went out there for 6-7 months to start off with. And that was where my eyes kind of opened to some really, really good coaching. We were playing alongside some decent, like, schoolboy players that come out of the school system in Australia, and our rugby kind of just rocketed from there. And after about 7 months, I went back to England. Wasn't a lot going on, and the club invited me back, and they sorted me a job, a place to stay. They put me into university. And I ended up staying there about 3.5 years. And towards the end of it, I was going really well, and I was in the Waratahs set up, and there was a rugby coach at my club side, and he's an old Yorkshireman, and he used to coach at Leicester in the academy, and he coached kind of Dan Cole and Tommy Youngs and that kind of era.
Yeah.
And so he had contact with Cockers. So he said, look, I'm gonna set up a trial. Leicester will fly you back. You go back there for a month, see how you get on. And it kind of went from there. So December, I think it was about 2009, I went back for a trial for a month.
That's amazing.
And I think Jordan Crane picked me up on the first day, and I was kind of thrown in at the deep end.
Wow.
So it was, thinking back to it, I mean, it feels like a long time ago. It's not really that long, but it was, bizarre circumstances, really, to go from playing club rugby in Australia, having not really had any ambition to playing rugby, to suddenly being on trial at Leicester.
That's amazing. So you were near, let's say near, you were, when you say you're in the Waratahs setup, you're in one of the feeder clubs going into them.
Well, how it works is those regions like New South Wales, they all have kind of club competitions going on. So I was playing in the club comp in Sydney.
Yeah.
And I was also part of their kind of A team is called, I think they've changed it now, but it was called the Junior Waratahs. So
yeah,
I was in there with Scott Seo, who's playing.
Yeah, yeah.
I was actually in there with Peter Beetham, funnily enough, and when he came to Leicester. Who else? Couple of players that kind of done some decent stuff in Super Rugby. So played a few games for them against Queensland A and the Brumbies and things like that, and was kind of working towards that, really. But I was only about 4 months in before I got the chance to go to Leicester. So I kind of said to them, thanks, but I think I'm going to try and take up this opportunity.
I mean, to me, that's really strange, because, you know, you're in Australia, beautiful country. I'm guessing the weather was okay. And you get to wear all that cool Waratahs stash. Why would you risk it to go over to Leicester for the cold? And, you know, this isn't an actual, you know, starting place on the Leicester team. This is just a trial at Leicester.
Yeah, so, well, George Shute, I remember him as well the first day going, what the hell are you doing coming to Leicester when you lived in Sydney, you idiot? So he's not the only one that's kind of thinking about that. But it was just too good an opportunity. I thought it was that kind of case of, you know, worst case scenario, I'll go back to Australia and I'll crack on with what I'm doing. So that's not a bad alternative. And so I thought, I'll go back for the month and go from there. And in the end, Leicester said, look, we'll give you a contract. So I was earning peanuts as a tree lopper in Sydney. And I just thought, well, they're giving me a full-time rugby contract. It's a bit of a no-brainer, really. So,
yeah, so
I gave up that Australian life and headed back to Leicester.
So just something you mentioned earlier on then, was your time in Australia the first time that you really encountered, for want of a better term, proper coaching?
Yeah, I've got to be careful, because I don't want to put anyone's nose out of joining Milton Keynes. But Milton Keynes is a great local club.
Yeah.
And I think it's level 7 or level 8. Great people behind the scenes. But The club in Australia, like I say, their first team, I mean, they had Luke Burgess at nine, they had the Fianga brothers, they had Matt Tamua was playing.
Bloody hell.
They had some big players in their first team. But I was only playing third Colts, but they're kind of under 21s coach who eventually went up to coach the first team, kind of looked after the whole Colts stuff. So he was a brilliant coach, and I hadn't really played with players of the standard that I'd met over there. There were guys out of the big private schools that had played Australian school boards,
yeah,
or Australian under 20s. So I was training with these guys day in, day out, alongside having two or three decent coaches, and starting to progress and play at a decent level. And that whole thing put together was kind of how I improved as a player, really.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say similar experience to yourself. Obviously, it's not, because you played for Leicester Tigers. But, you know, coming through, like, level eight or lower league rugby, we had a situation at Broughton Park where we had, out of nowhere, a guy that used to play for Broughton Park, went to Sale Sharks, injury, turned his hands coaching. But then the difference of having someone who knows how to coach just over a short term makes such a difference to your rugby.
It does, yeah. And I think the difference is that they don't really tell you how to play the game or tell you what to do. But every training session we did was kind of, he pushed us and pushed us and pushed us, and we'd make mistakes over and over again. But he wouldn't jump in and tell you what you needed to do right. He'd wait for you to work it out.
Yeah.
And it sounds really simple, but it's a bloody hard skill. And that's a real difference between kind of really good coaches, I think, and coaches that are just, you know, kind of in there and dictating things and telling you what to do and how to do things. That's a difference, I think.
Oh, I've been in many a huddle where I'm just listening to people talk about lines of running or something which I just can't relate to because I don't know what it is. And I think the real good coaches put you in the situation so you experience what it is. It's exactly as you said there. It's making you learn your own lessons, really.
Yeah, and I think if I actually compare some of the stuff we were doing in Australia to what I was doing in England, it was all built around kind of like 6-on-4s and 8-on-6s and things like that. So you're always working with a man advantage or two men advantage.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean by that they'd let you work out how to try and get to space or get the ball to space. And alongside that, playing with players that had a bit of skill and would try do things and little kick throughs, and some of the skill level was massive. So they're the kind of different things I faced out there compared to maybe here, where it was a bit like Auckland grid style and hands across the pitch and those kind of things, you know, that don't necessarily help you get better.
Yeah, it still makes me laugh when we do Auckland grids just prior to a game.
Oh, now it's done for comedy, isn't it? It's not done as a serious yeah. drill.
Pass and follow.
Yeah, pass and follow. Yeah. So all that coach speak.
So tell me this then, when you get to Leicester Tigers, I mean, it does have a fearsome reputation as a club, and rightly so, because its history is so grand. Do you get an impression of that when you walk in? I mean, are you treated like an equal, or are you treated like someone who needs to prove yourself? What's the feeling like when you go to a club like Leicester?
It is scary. I mean, I was quite lucky that I had the coach I mentioned that got me the trial, Mike Pennison.
Mm-hmm.
I was quite lucky. He'd been subtly throwing in bits of detail about Leicester as a club and what the people are like and what training's like. He'd kind of obviously been building me up towards sending me over there, but without me realising.
Yeah.
You know, we'd have a 10-minute chat after training here or there. So I kind of had an idea about what it might be like, but obviously facing it, the real thing is pretty different. I say I got picked up by Jordan Crane the first day. It was actually Cocker's.
Really?
Jordan picked me up after that, but the first day, Cocker's got me in the car and we're driving to the training ground. It's pretty quiet. And I think his first words were, "So Ed, I'll know within 30 seconds whether you're good enough."
Wow.
And I said, you know, obviously being 21 and little bit naive. All right, okay, that's good. And he's like, if you're not good enough, mate, you'll be going back to Australia. So that was on the drive in, and then when I got in there, there's two training changing rooms at Oval Park where they train. One's for kind of the younger guys, the less experienced guys, and the other one's for the family men, the more senior blokes. And I'd gone into this changing room that I was told to go in, and I just put my clothes in there and got changed and went up to the gym or did something and came back, and all my clothes were in the bin.
Oh, really?
And so I'm going, crying out loud, you know, what's going on here? And some lad comes in and says, oh, don't worry about that. That's Richard Blaze, a spot that you're getting changed, and you'll just be doing that to make a point. So, just small things. I laugh now. I look back at it massively. It is funny, but the first day was scary. Yeah.
So I mean, when Richard Blaze does that for you, is that point taken?
To be fair, so okay. Well, can you just tell me where is free rather than throwing your clothes in the bin?
That's excellent.
That'd probably
be a
little bit more helpful for me.
Sorry, go on.
No, that was my thought process. So, but you know, generally, everyone was, they're pretty down to earth blokes at Leicester. Like when I arrived, even the guys that I kind of seen a little bit on telly and heard about and watched, they were all really easy to get on with. You know, they weren't spiky. There were no egos. But training was just, it was tough. It was brutal. So. Just had to learn quickly.
Well, back to what you said about Cockers, I was lucky enough to interview him, and he's many things, but one of the things he definitely is he's a character with quite a lot of gravitas, and he seems to kind of move between very serious and then very, very jokey, and you don't know exactly what it's quite a clever thing he does. He kind of kept me off guard quite a lot, and then he'd draw you back in, and then you're off guard again.
He's got steely eyes, hasn't he, Cockers?
Yes.
Like, piercing blue eyes. Cockers, to be honest with you, I had a great time working with Cockers, and he kind of mentored me a lot through my rugby. He kind of came down hard on me when I made mistakes in games, but never to the point where I lost any confidence. It was just that kind of attitude. And he was good, but you're right, he's a smart bloke. He's very street smart.
Yeah.
He knows how to own a conversation.
That's a great phrase for him.
But ultimately he's just a winner. Like you know, that's the most praise I think that's the only praise he'd care about, really, is he will do anything to win. It says poor network. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, sweet. He'll do anything to win. So a lot of that attitude rubbed off on the players, and that's, you know, you can see some of the success he's had at Edinburgh in a short time.
Yeah, I actually think the Edinburgh story is one of the nicest stories in rugby at the moment, aside from maybe the Stuart Lancaster story, which is truly remarkable.
Yeah, well, I was reading about that last night, funnily enough. I read an interview with him in... might have been the Times. He was talking about his feelings.
That's
after,
right,
the,
yeah,
World Cup, and it's brutal, really, when in hindsight, when you look back at the kind of attention and bad press he got. He's not a bad bloke, but he was ripped to shreds, to be fair.
No, I think it's one of those double-edged swords in sport, though, isn't it? You know, the higher you get and the more profile and money that you attract, you know, when you do fail, it is going to be brutal. But on the flip side, when you succeed, you're an absolute hero. You know,
no doubt. It's live and die by the sword, don't you? So, it's good to see how well he's doing at Leinster, and I'm pretty sure there'll be a few clubs after him that will want him in charge. I wonder what he'll do, to be fair. I have no idea.
Yeah, I do wonder if he's lined up for a DOR role in the Premiership. It would make sense, unless he's so happy in Leinster. And on the other hand, why wouldn't you be? But yeah,
right, exactly. And he says himself, it's a 40-minute flight from Leeds. So he's probably away a bit more than he'd like from his family. But he's working with some of the best players in the world, and he's winning trophies. And well, you wouldn't give that up easily, I don't think.
No, did you manage to catch any of the Pro 14 final on the weekend, or now you're on holiday, is that it?
No, I didn't see the Pro 14. I watched the Premiership final.
Yeah,
watched the Barbars game at the weekend.
Oh, in fact, I mean, I'm not going to get you on the hook too much for this because obviously you still play with some of the lads. But what did you make of that? That was brutal.
Yeah, it's hard. I can't say I was expecting it to be that kind of result. I mean, George Ford summed it up, didn't he, afterwards? He said they're pretty embarrassed about it. You can't imagine Eddie Jones will be taking that too lightly. So it's not something. A lot of those guys, he said he didn't have a lot of players available, which is true, but there were still some top quality players in that 15.
Yeah.
That will play, I imagine, in South Africa. It's not really a game you want hanging over you as you go into a test series, I imagine. But you have to give it to the Barbars. Like some of the tries they scored were ridiculous.
It makes me think, though, and it's a point that I made on Egg Chasers the other week, like, does contact with your players matter or does it not? Because judging by the Barbars' performance, you can just get 15 of the world's best players and they can beat a team that have been together for 2 weeks. So I was kind of left thinking, like, this just shouldn't happen. I mean, maybe lose, sure, but lose because you were, you know, throwing interceptions or something. But they were just missing tackles, and that was the most bizarre thing for me. All their systems and processes, they just seem to go missing. And I think, as a camp, they're going to be so disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to make excuses for the guys, because I'm sure they won't want him. But from watching it, it wasn't your usual flow of a test game or a Premiership game that you'd see, you know, that's quite structured and a bit pragmatic, if you like. It was just play from anywhere, and they were caught short, really. And alongside that, like you said, you got some of the best players in the world with a bit of freedom to play and do what they want outside of that usual, like, structure, if you like. And you know, that's where you got some of those tries from. But if you're an England player, you'd be a little bit worried about how you came across to Eddie Jones, because he made some comments in the about a handful of players showing they're probably not up to scratch, and everyone's looking around going, well, who's he talking about?
Yeah, do you know what? I really don't like that sort of attitude from coaches. And the reason I don't is I kind of think it's a way out, and international coaches do this quite a lot. The idea of the test match animal, because in a way, it kind of gets rid of the coach's responsibility to do the coaching and make sure the team's good. Because you can just turn around and go, well, you know what, I don't have enough test match animals. Well, sorry, you know, that's what you paid for.
the simple answer to that is there are definitely the players available that are more than capable enough of performance than they did against the Barbarians.
Yeah.
Isn't there? You know, you can't argue that there isn't the talent, I don't think.
I wonder if there's a sort of... sorry, go on.
That was a main point. You know, coaches have different styles. You know, Cocker style, you know, which is, you know, pretty obvious to see. It's about digging in. It's about working harder than the other team. It's, have you got enough fight? Are you strong enough? Are you capable enough to play at this club or this level?
Mm.
And now I'm under a different coach at Gloucester, in Johan, who's very much a man manager, and he wants everyone to feel part of the team. He includes everyone, and it's a different approach. So it's the same. I think it's the same at international level. Eddie Jones obviously works the guys very hard and demands a lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking aloud here, I wonder if the flip side of this is actually, when you do have players like Semi Radrada and Victor Vito, maybe don't put them in a structure.
Well, there is an argument for that, yeah. I agree. I mean, if I was playing with players like that, I'd let them do what they wanted to do, really. They can do anything they want with the pace they've got, the skill set they've got. Mm. I don't know about Rado Rado, but I know Vito played sevens, didn't he? And there was a, there was a few players that have kind of come through the sevens. I think Ben Ryan had said something about, oh, sarcastically, sevens isn't a good development tool, but you can see the crossover in a game like that.
Oh, absolutely. It's a difficult one because I guess the best athletes in the world at sevens might also be very, very good at 15s too. So
yeah, but you're not going to see me playing sevens, are you? So there's only one way, really.
Yeah,
the guys who are quick and skillful, and the rest of us will play 15s.
Yeah, quite. Just going back to yourself then, because I did go massively off topic there. What's your link to Nottingham then? Did you get signed by Tigers and then get loaned out to Nottingham?
Yeah. So. What happened was after that trial in December, they said, "Okay, we'll have you back. We'll have you back in June, July for the start of pre-season." So I thought, "Great, I've got 6-7 months to enjoy Australia for a bit, and then I'll come back." And Glenn Delaney, who's now at the Highlanders,
yeah,
I was meant to play a game just as I guess to prove myself in that trial month for Nottingham. And I went there and trained, and the game actually got postponed for snow or something like that. And I went away and kind of never really thought twice about it. And as I was about to go back, Glenn Delaney said, do you fancy coming back at some point and playing for Nottingham? You can come play here. We'll give you a car. We'll put you up. I stayed at Dan Montague's house, if you can remember him.
Dan Montague.
And I thought, yeah, why not? I'll come back early. So I came back in March and played in the playoffs. That was the year Exeter got promoted. So we had a good team. We actually beat Exeter in Nottingham.
Did you really?
I came back and played 6 games, and that's
so was
that's
this
where my link to Nottingham was. And then I was kind of contracted to Nottingham to start off with for the first season, but Richard Blaise got injured. Jeff Parlin was done, was out. Lewis Deacon was injured, and Lester said, "All right, you're staying with us." And I never went back.
So just in Nottingham then, were you? Was that the time in Nottingham? Did they get Ali? Oh, who's the All Black? The All Black second row.
Oh, Ali Williams.
Ali Williams.
No, that was a couple of years after. That was leading up to the World Cup, actually, wasn't it?
I can't remember. I just remember him being there. And I remember him kind of always knocking on the door to get to the Premiership, but maybe missing one or two players. He had a hooker. Is it Duffy or someone who was phenomenal?
Joe Duffy, yeah.
Yes.
Joe Duffy, yeah. Joe Duffy was a good player. He was at Nottingham, went to Leicester for a couple of years, and then he actually went back to Nottingham, I think.
Yeah,
But that team, the team we had was... If I can remember off the top of my head, it was a good team. I mean, Tom Youngs was playing in there. We had Greg Tonks, Tom Casson, the centre, was playing. Rousey was obviously in the row as well. He was a good player. It was a good side. Can you still hear me?
Sorry, yeah, literally just
no worries.
Just
where did
alarm.
I jump out?
No. It was me then. An alarm on my computer went off.
What are you reminding yourself for?
Believe it or not, I'm reminding myself to practice my stand-up comedy routine because I'm trying to do stand-up comedy on Monday.
All right, are you gonna give us a joke?
Absolutely not.
Come
Absolutely
on.
Not. It is. I didn't realise I'm signed up to do Sunday and Monday, and I practiced about 6 weeks ago. I've not picked up a microphone since, and I'm absolutely bricking it. So that is what I'm practicing. That is why my alarm just went off.
So no material for the podcast?
No, absolutely not. Although I'm thinking, I might periscope it because my thought process behind this now, behind absolutely everything, which is I'm going to fail, I want to fail on such a catastrophic level, there'll be something in it. So I'm going to get someone to periscope the whole thing onto either Egg Chaser's Twitter or my own Twitter on Sunday and Monday. So yeah, look out for that.
Yeah, are you going to tweet a link to that?
It'll just go live. But yeah, I've got. I used to do a rugby league podcast with John Wilkin and Mark Flanagan.
Oh, what a legend he is!
Oh, mate, he is one of the brightest guys that I've met.
He's a top bloke. Every time I've never met him, but you see him on telly, I like the way he comes across.
Oh, he's exactly the same in real life. He's literally one of the most charismatic blokes that I've ever met. Back to the Cocker's thing, owning a conversation. He just does. And then he goes off on this sort of stream of consciousness on his podcast. Yeah. You think, bloody hell, that's pretty deep.
Yeah. Oh, I'll have to... Is that any recommendations on what to listen to then?
Whippets and Flat Caps would be the one.
Okay.
But yeah, those boys are coming to watch me as well on Monday, because I just thought the more pressure, the better. So that's where we're at.
Well, fair play to you. The idea of doing a stand-up, well, being the least funny man in the world anyway, but yeah, doing a stand-up, mate, would be, yeah, good on you. So I look forward to watching it.
One of the reasons I decided to do it is because, do you know Harlequins did it for their pre-season about 5 years ago?
No, I didn't know that. What's the story behind that?
I think it was a team-building thing, and they just decided to say, right, everyone, you're going to have a stand-up coach, and in a pre-season thing, you're going to write jokes and tell them to the rest of the team, which I think would be terrifying, and yet a great team-building thing.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, it's not terrifying telling it back to the team, I don't reckon.
Oh, I bet it would be, you know. I bet it'd be even worse, actually.
No, not a chance. What, to a random audience?
Yeah, I'd rather do it to randoms than, like... yeah, definitely.
No way. Oh. No way. I'd be much more comfortable delivering crap jokes to the teammates than on stage.
Well, we'll find out on Monday when I probably won't do any broadcasting again for next six months after that. Another guy that was really fortunate enough to interview not so long ago was actually Glenn Delaney. So I thought I might just take a moment to say what a brilliant bloke that he is.
Oh, yeah, one of the best. I've always got along with Glenn. I've got a lot of time for Glenn. He's again, great man manager.
Yeah.
Like, his ability to bring guys together and pull in the same direction is kind of, well, that's it. That's his kind of X factor. But just on a one-to-one level, he's an easy bloke to speak to, and he'll give everyone the time of day. So
yeah,
you probably had a decent chat with him, didn't you?
Oh, he's absolutely brilliant. So the interview was good. But the thing which I really really liked about it, and I don't mind pushing my luck a bit, and you know, occasionally I do, I thought, you know what, I've got a Premiership coach.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
On my phone book. And I'm trying to write line-up moves for the mighty Didsbury Tok H Rugby Club over in Manchester, where I coach. Yeah. I thought, do you know what, I'll just ask him if he'd help me out. And next thing you know, I'm on the phone to him for about an hour. I thought there is no need for him to do that. He's only spoke to me once, and it's just a measure of the guy.
Yeah, exactly. He's brilliant bloke, Clax. Yeah, isn't yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Have you spoken to Rousey about him at all?
I haven't.
He'll have a lot more about him than I will. But I still speak to Glenn fairly regularly, throw a few texts back and forth now and then. But even particularly so now, he's working with Major at the Highlanders, so
yeah. Well, I've got a feeling, you know, that the New Zealand Rugby Union have got pretty high plans for him, and probably for Major too.
Do you think?
I do, yeah. Because
what gives you that impression?
Well, the fact that he went to Canterbury and then so quickly from Canterbury went over to Highlanders, and you just know that the guys over in New Zealand know which coaches they want and where they want them and the types of people that they want, and it just wouldn't surprise me.
No, well, but he lived over here for a long, long time,
yeah.
Didn't he? I wouldn't be surprised if he came back, and that's not any inside knowledge. That's just my opinion, but I wouldn't be surprised if he came back just as well. But it just have to be the right job, and at the moment, you have to say where he's at in New Zealand. You know what? Again, you know he's in a great position. There'd be no need for him to come back, but I know you know he lived here for such a long time.
Yeah,
that I wouldn't be surprised to see him back.
But they do also value these guys, don't they? Who go abroad for so long. I guess the difference with Glenn. I'm literally just speculating here, which is he came over and he didn't really play at the highest level, certainly not international level, and he's made his bones as a coach overseas and then going back. And I actually think that if you look at the current New Zealand staff and the head coach before that, they're actually quite like that approach of going away, learning, and then coming back into it.
Yeah, and I mean, you see a lot of the best coaches weren't the best players. I know it's always said, it's a bit of a cliche now, but I'm not saying he wasn't a good player. I just know he had a shattered ankle by the end of his career. But you know, there's an example of loads of coaches that didn't necessarily have like stellar playing careers that are unbelievable coaches. So I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up at the very top. I know how good a guy he is and how good a rugby coach he is. So I hope he does get to that kind of level, because I think he deserves it. And I was a bit disappointed with when he left London Irish, really, because I thought he was doing a good job there.
Yeah, completely agree. I just think it is an organisational thing, and you know, the organisation went in a different direction, which turned out not to be exactly the right direction. But it is what it is. What it is.
Yeah, exactly.
So actually, during your career, you've only been at two Premiership clubs, but you've actually experienced some pretty substantial coaches. I mean, we just spoke about Glenn. You've had experience with Cockers, obviously, Major, who...
Yeah.
Actually, the reports I get back from Major, from the players in Leicester, are very similar to the reports that I get back about Ackerman, which is just, you know, a people's person.
Yeah, he's... Major's... I think he's a top bloke. And it doesn't matter whether you're... a British and Irish Lion, or whether you're a guy coming through the academy, he had absolutely the same amount of time and energy for everyone.
Yeah.
And, you know, his real strength was bringing on some of those young guys and giving them the experience and the confidence to play at the highest level. And, you know, you look at a guy like George Worth, for example, who started games like Munster away in the European Cup, and you know, he played some good rugby under Aaron. That was his real strength, I felt, was that he managed to kind of treat everyone the same, and the respect was there, alongside having top draw coaching, tactics, experience, whatever you want to call it. So yeah, you know, he was another bloke that kind of opened my eyes a little bit as to, you know, different ways to play the game, different ways of managing people. He was very organised. So yeah, he's got a lot going for him, and I think he'll reach the very top as well.
Yeah, completely agreed. Now, just in your experience then, because you had a very strange... Well, this is your first year at Gloucester, but it started off in a bit of an odd way. Your move, did you expect that? Were you called into an office one day? How did you find out about it, and how did it unfold?
It unfolded originally. I kind of understood that Johnny was looking to leave Gloucester. I didn't really know where or what he was doing. And then, you know, you kind of heard a bit of speculation that maybe he was going to Leicester, but I didn't think much more of it. And then I'd had a chat with the club, and Gloucester had said, well, you know, look, we'd really like someone like Ed Slater.
And, brilliant.
And so it was built on the back of that, really. So they let their interest be known, and Leicester kind of put it to me, and we toed and throwed, and I thought about it for a long time, and then I talked to David Humphreys, and as you well know, it the way it played out was that I ended up signing a contract with Gloucester, and that was a deal done, really.
There's not many times, when there's a move like that and it's a win-win. Now, I don't know if you wanted to stay at Leicester or, how you feel about it personally. Maybe you can tell me after, actually. But this did feel like a win, like a bit of a win-win. Leicester really needed needs some help in outside backs, and Gloucester for the longest time have been looking for a forward, well, much like you, actually.
Well, it's very kind of you, but let's be honest, when if you don't know a great deal about rugby, or you can still know a lot and probably not know who I am, but most people know Johnny. The reality is that you're looking at swapping a club second rower for an international winger, and I imagine there was a lot of people at Gloucester that were going, I'm not sure about that, and I'm sure there are a lot of people at Leicester going, oh yeah, we've got a bloke that runs really quick and can score tries. So I think that was the reality of the situation, but I like to think as the season's gone on, I've kind of proved my worth a little bit. I might not be a try-scoring machine, that's for sure. But,
it's overrated.
I trudge around the pitch and try and do as much as I can. But it was a strange deal, and it was difficult to adapt at first because it kind of hit me from the blind side, and it was unexpected, and it all kind of happened in 2 weeks, if you like. So trying to arrange for a family of two kids and a pregnant wife, it was hard, but a good learning experience, without pulling a sob story. It was just an interesting experience getting through that, and I was quite lucky that I had Fraser Balmain down here, who's a good mate of mine.
Owen Williams, I guess, moved at the same time, did he not?
He moved that summer as well, so I kind of came down and lived with him for the first few months, and Owen Williams as well looked after me, and that made it easier to come into the club and meet the guys.
Mm.
And then after that, I kind of see it as three periods. So like the first period was massive adjustment, and I was kind of starting here and there and having some good games, and then I was coming off the bench. The middle part of the season wasn't great. There's a lot going on, and then kind of hit the ground running February time, really, where I kind of managed to pull my match fitness to where it needed to be, and then I felt I played my best rugby in that kind of new year to the end of the year.
Yeah, see, I actually think throughout all you said then, you've actually done yourself a massive disservice, because I think, and I'm being absolutely genuine here, that as much as Gloucester did not want to lose Johnny May, and I don't think anyone would want to, they are JB, smart enough. Hello?
Sorry, you cut out there. On the bit you're going to talk nicely to me, it's suddenly cut off. So.
All right, yeah. Well, I mean, no one wants to lose Johnny May, right? But I do think that the Gloucester fans are smart enough, and they've watched enough rugby to know that the thing that they need fixing, last year was that pack. And I think that was priority 1, 2 and 3. And I think the club knows that as well, because that's why I went out and bought Afoa and Hibbard, and they've thrown... they've thrown money at the problem in previous years. I actually think that swap deal was probably one of the smarter signings.
Well, yeah, like I say, I've showed that although Johnny is a great player and he's an international class winger, like I say, hopefully I've done a decent job last season. And I actually personally, I know you say I'm doing myself a disservice, but I genuinely think I played some okay and some good rugby at times, but not throughout the year for my liking. So I do want to, the challenge for me is to be really consistent next year and not turn up slightly overweight, slightly unfit.
Yeah.
Not match, with not enough match practice and get a full pre-season under my belt. And now, the family are here and settled up. I hope that actually I can push on a little bit next year.
So you said you're playing your best rugby. What constitutes good rugby to you? I mean, how do you set your standards when you're in the video room? How do you like to be perceived by the other lads? Oof. What in your mind is good rugby for you?
For me personally?
Yeah.
It's in the detail for me. So, you know, particularly at set piece time, around the line out, it might be if I'm calling the line out, you know, am I making good decisions? You know, what's my thought process? And I'm looking back at that. Around the park, my eyes are focused on how quickly I'm getting off the floor. Am I making my tackles? Are they dominant? And then how involved am I? Am I influencing the game at all? You know, am I making a tip pass when the hole opens up, or is my support play any good? Am I working hard enough to get involved in the game and reading where the ball goes? So that's kind of a gist of what I'm looking at when I watch a game back and seeing, you know, how well I'm playing. I'll judge it based on what my eye thinks is a good standard, which I've built up.
Yeah.
Over the years of watching, training and playing with players that are actually decent.
I absolutely love the one of how quickly can I get off the floor, because it's one of those things, requires no skill, but it requires a lot of heart.
It does when you're as heavy as me as well. So, yeah. Like I say, dragging an overweight backside around the pitch. And the King's Home as well. I've got to say, King's Home, the pitch there.
Have they not had the hybrid pack pitch?
I remember playing there for Leicester season before last. And we beat them in the last. We beat Gloucester in the last minute.
Oh, was that the opening
end of the
season?
Game, I was like, I don't have to play on that week in, week out.
Was that the opening game of last season?
It was. Yeah,
that was an incredible game.
Yeah, we were down by about 20-odd points.
Yeah,
Sammy
four tries down.
Was kicking for goal, and we drove Mo from the 22 in the last minute to win it. So.
Well, I mean,
and that was at the start of the season, so I remember thinking, I don't want to play on this ever again. And then, sure enough, I was back there last year, but it's a boggy pitch. And to be fair to the club, they're spending a lot of money putting in a brilliant pitch off the back of speaking to the players, the coaches, the medical staff, and you know, I think it's a really good decision. And you know, quite excited actually to have a good firm pitch hopefully for next year, and I think it'll make a difference with the way we're playing rugby.
I think some of your back. Oh, of course, you've got Danny Cipriani showing up next year, which is brilliant. I don't know how he's going to fit in with all that talent, because Billy Burns isn't too bad, but
no, he's quality.
He is, isn't he? He's got that sort of X factor about him. In fact, they're both fairly similar players, truth be told.
Yeah, I'd say so. I think Bill was one of the guys I was most impressed with when I turned up. I didn't know a great deal about Billy. Obviously, I knew who he was and, you know, and all those things. I knew the usual stuff. Mm. But when I trained with him, the more I played with him, he's a real, real talented bloke. And I still don't think we'll have seen the best of him. And he's only a young guy, and he's played, I think he's 23 or 24. He's played 100 games for Gloucester.
Has he? I'm sure. He might actually be younger than that.
Yeah, well, but you know, that helps my point. But
yeah, it does.
He's played a lot of rugby, and I still think he's got a lot more to his game that he maybe hasn't demonstrated just yet. And that's not a criticism. I think he's been quality. I think he can really push on.
So it's
going to be interesting. Obviously, Danny Cipriani speaks for himself, and you know, everyone knows how talented the bloke is, and you know, maybe they'll work well together.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just having the two of them, I mean, it's so hard to stay fit the whole season. And if you've got two guys of that standard, well, more power to you.
Yeah. Well, you got to see it as, you know, I mean, obviously, you bring in five class locks, I wouldn't be completely happy, but
yeah.
you know, you can't argue that you need that competition across the squad, really. So you know, from that point of view, yeah, having a player like Cipriani come in and push the standard up in training, push the quality up and across the squad, you know, that's part of professional rugby now. You've got some quality players, in if you look across all the squads, there's a lot of good players floating around.
Yeah, well, I think one of the indicators to how deep the Premiership is in fly halves now is there was no immediate team that needed Danny Cipriani. I think most teams would be improved by him, but that's different to saying, you know, a few years ago, everybody needed a fly half. It feels like almost everyone has got a fly half now.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know a great deal about what was going on behind the scenes for him, but whether he'd had a chat with Eddie Jones and he knew he was going to be involved with England, maybe he's holding out for that.
Yeah,
maybe,
I think that's
maybe
it.
Other teams thought he was going abroad and that was that. I don't know, but that's just me reading between the lines. But yeah, to see him turn up at Gloucester, like I say, it'll be a good addition, and I think it'll really push the standard of the squad and as I say, training to another level, I think.
Yeah, I mean, back to Billy Burns, I always think the reason I know he's really good at rugby is because he's got such small arms. I think you're going to have to be seriously talented to pull off that look.
Small in what sense? Like T-Rex arms?
Or yeah, just like little spindly arms. You know, he looks like such a slight guy. It might be because he plays next to Mark Atkinson, who's 6'4". But I think,
yeah,
God,
yeah,
he is a small bloke.
Hell of a tackler, though, Billy.
Oh, yeah. Like, but, I mean, that's we'll kind
put
of...
put his head in at, like... We'll tackle... I remember him putting Will Skelton down pretty comfortably. And Will Skelton must have about 100 kilos on him.
Yeah, what's Will Skelton, like 130? Something ridiculous.
God, he feels heavier than that when you try and tackle him.
So, you've been to Leicester, you're now at Gloucester. Two clubs I consider two of the grandest and oldest in all of rugby.
Yeah.
Is there... Do you find them quite similar, or is there a distinct difference between the two?
I think the difference will be in crowd size, for example.
Yeah.
You know, Leicester is well known, they get 20,000+ comfortably for every home game. But other than that when I was kind of weighing up the move, I kind of always, after being at Leicester, thought, you know, not bothered about money, but I'd like to play for a club that's got decent support, good history. You know, those kind of things I think are quite important. If you're going to go and play for a team,
yeah,
and you want to buy into it, it's pretty difficult if you're playing in a half-empty stadium, I imagine. Not that certainly done it.
Well, I watch Sale quite a lot, and it can be testing.
Yeah. I mean, you know... Motivation, you know, is different for different people. But personally, I felt like I wanted to run out at home with a decent crowd, vocal crowd, and so yeah, all of that stuff was actually a big driver in attracting me to Gloucester, and it didn't disappoint. Like the noise, I tell you, the noise when we beat Exeter in the first game of the season, coming from the Shed.
I can only imagine.
I genuinely haven't heard that kind of noise at a rugby ground. It was. I was pretty shocked by it. It was brilliant. It was a brilliant, brilliant night, actually. And that's not just me being PC because I play for Gloucester now, but it was pretty loud. So, they're important things, and certainly there's a lot of similarities between the clubs in that sense.
Mm. Well, embarrassingly, you know, I've never been to King's Home to watch Gloucester. I've been to King's Home to watch Wales A, but never to watch Gloucester. So that will be on my list of things
we'll
to do for next year.
Get in the Shed then.
Exactly. I would fit in perfectly there.
Do you actually support a team, JB? Have you got?
I don't know. The only team I do support really is a team in North Wales called RGC. You've probably never heard of them, but they're like Wales's fifth region, and they're slowly developing. Because I'm from North Wales, right? And there is nothing in North Wales in terms of professional sport. Everyone watches football. They all support Liverpool. And there's a smattering of rugby clubs. And then all of a sudden, the WRU put this RGC thing right in the middle of it, and it's been a tremendous success. Well, getting there.
I'll have to look at it. When we finish, I'll go and do a bit of digging on that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really interesting project because they've just got all the local lads in the area. And this is kind of what I meant before, actually, when I was talking to you about good coaching. The difference between having a bunch of really low-level, kind of level 8-ish teams... And the difference between that and then winning the Welsh Premiership and also the Welsh Cup, it's just coaching. I mean, there's one or two players they bring in, But yeah, they've done really well in the Welsh Premiership. They've won the Welsh Cup, and they're literally just one level below the regions. So if I had a team, it'd be that one.
And a lot of those guys playing in that side, they've been just playing club rugby and not really been on the radar of like other Premiership clubs or the regions.
Originally, so it's this is quite RGC centric now, but originally the story behind it was. They were just going to bring in local lads. And that's basically what they did until, like, a couple of years ago. The guy, my best friend from back home who lived next door to me, captained the club. So it really was local lads that had just played a lower standard. They put him in a professional-style setup with a good gym and some cracking coaches. Phil Davis coached there, Mark Jones, I'm going to say Kai Horseman. Not Kai Horseman, Chris Horseman. So, they've had some good coaches and they've just improved gradually throughout. But the other thing that they did, which I find equally as interesting, is when the South Walians needed to improve a player, they would send him to North Wales. Because if you can imagine being in the Swansea Academy, being from Swansea, things can get slightly crazy occasionally. Yeah. Whether it be drinking or going out or, just being a lad about town.
Surrounded by your mates and, I hear you.
Yeah, so they ship them off to North Wales where there's nothing to do. And they live in, Clan Roost or something.
Siberia.
yeah. You show up at 6 o'clock, you train, you play. And then when you're upskilled enough, they'll send you back down to the Ospreys. So
I like that. I'll look into that because I'm interested in, obviously looking after rugby, I'm interested in, like talent stuff, like youth development, because I'm convinced, my story is not unique in rugby in the sense that I started late and I got myself into the professional game. I think if you look across rugby, there'd be a fair few guys who were late starters or late bloomers or whatever it is. And I still think there's got to be another way of finding those kind of rough diamonds that are floating around the leagues or those younger guys that maybe haven't thought about rugby or taking up rugby and they can excel. So, it is something I'm keen on. I quite like the sound of what you're talking about.
Well, particularly front row and second row, because, it depends really, isn't it? Front row, I think, because you can be a big bloke, but not necessarily be Premiership standard. And then you might just drop out of the game or you might fall down the leagues. And those boys, they're very valuable. I mean, you don't really get very strong until you're, 23, 24? There's loads of them. I'll tell you another one.
And you could argue nowadays, probably 5-6 years ago, you could argue that if you're going to play in the front row, you your technique and all of those things had to be, spot on or you had to be a different level. But now, the scrums in and out these days. Joe Marler came out recently, didn't he, saying he was a dying breed of prop? I don't know if you saw that.
I'm sorry, I'm just questioning Joe on that one because he says he's a dying breed of prop. I mean, that comes from a guy with an insanely high tackle count and work rate. I'd actually say he's been a little bit modest there. But yeah, I take his point.
But no, I know Joe to a reasonable level and I could see what he was trying to say is that he was, as he was coming through in the game, everything was scrum, 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 scrum. You've got to be, that's your priority. Whereas I'm not 100% convinced nowadays it's the real priority. I think you can get by in the scrum. And if you've got real X factor around the park, teams probably prefer that nowadays.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I actually think it all goes in a cycle. Because I feel like I've been waiting for the demise of the scrum for the last 10 years now. And scrums will depower. They'll depower slightly and you'll get a new breed of prop in. And then all of a sudden you'll get a couple of bigger props in and think, oh, hang on, this was a terrible idea. idea. What were we thinking? And it's...
But if you compare this is getting a bit nausea for you, but you compare how they used to engage to what they engage now.
Yeah.
It's a lot, you still see dominant scrums, don't get me wrong. You don't really see turnover ball much on scrum, do you? You see the guys attacking with the ball, putting the ball in, dominating another side, but you don't necessarily see the other way around.
Well, yeah, that's true. And I think this is law of unintended consequences here, which is when they took the hit away, they penalised basically the more technical prop. So you could be, let's think of someone who's really, like, really athletic. I'll give an example. Matt Mullen, right? You could be a really athletic prop that can run and do everything else. And if you were really good technically, you could probably be a little bit weaker and lighter and still win all your scrums and be dominant. Now, because of taking away that hit and that technicality, it's basically who is the strongest guy. They've actually made propping even, it rewards even bigger guys now. And I think...
Yeah, and that's a fair point. You see the props nowadays are like 6'3", 6'4".
They're enormous.
Like, it's frightening. Look at some of... I can't believe I've forgotten his name. Is it Powell, the guy at the Saints, the young guy?
At Saints, Powell. Hill.
I can't remember his first name.
There's Paul Hill, and he is he's quite a big beast. Who's
he? But I mean, even younger than him.
Who's that then? I don't know him. That's embarrassing.
In fact, I'm gonna have to look it up because it'll do.
There's Kieran head. Brooks, obviously.
Yeah, Brooksy.
Who's massive.
I'm talking about these young guys coming in now. Here we go. We'll get him up here. Oh, Painter, not Power. Aaron Painter.
I've not seen this lad.
Okay, well, look at Aaron Painter, and he's massive, 6'4", maybe taller, 130 kilos. And then you got a guy at Leicester, Joe Hayes, who again is like 6'3", 130 kilos. Sam Graham's law at Tigers, who's 6'4" and 120 kilos. Like, the young guys coming through that are playing those positions are massive.
They are. So,
it backs up your point that probably taking away the engage helps the bigger guy. But they've got to be able to get around the park now, haven't they?
Yeah, well, I'll say something interesting, right? It just anecdotally kind of like links into this. I was talking to a director of rugby the other day. I'll tell you who it was as well. It was Steve Diamond. And Steve Diamond was saying that he doesn't worry about buying props now because he can make them. As long as he's got the right body shape and strength, he can make a prop. Which I thought that was a fascinating comment because props have been paid so much for so long and they're so rare that for a director of rugby to say, yeah, just get me the right body shape and the rest I'll do. I thought that's quite a bold statement.
Yeah, and you wouldn't say Sale have ever gone really for massive props in the last few years, have they?
Like, not really.
Names-wise. They've had good props that have turned out to play really well.
Well, yeah, I mean, the latest tight head they've got at the moment is... I've probably thrown him a bit under the bus here after I've said what Steve Diamond said. But it was... is Will Griff-John, who is an enormous man. And
and where was he playing? Doncaster.
Doncaster, yeah. And
there's a point, like, he's come through. Like, someone like Tom Francis as well, who was picked out of nowhere. And yeah, you're right. These guys, Steve Diamond's, you've got a point.
Yeah, well, an interesting thing on Will Griff-John.
Kind of mould him.
Like, the last time he missed a tackle was, he missed two against Gloucester in December and hasn't missed one since.
Was it me sidestepping him?
He actually said that. Probably. He said that the first one you ran over him and the second one you sidestepped round him, like all court game.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah, I kind of remember it clearly because I think it was my only one of carries ever.
So, so post-rugby, are you looking to go into that sort of like talent development then or talent ID?
I am. Yeah. I want to stay in rugby because, believe it or not now, you know, maybe I only started as a 16-year-old, but my expertise really in my apprenticeship has been served in rugby. So I feel like that's where my strengths lay. So, you know, long term, I'm studying on a course up in Manchester.
Oh, yeah.
A direct sport at Salford. I'm on there with Matt Tate's doing it with me, Matthew Hoggard and Kelly Southern and the athlete, and there's some good sports people.
Oh, the cricketer, oh god, yeah.
People like Mark Allen, who's director of football at Rangers, and so they're good people on the course that I can kind of learn from. And then, the aim is eventually I'd like to take on that role of like the director or general manager, whatever you want it to be called these days.
Yeah,
and probably move away from coaching because I like the other side of it. I like the recruitment, I like the contract negotiations. I'm interested by that stuff.
Now, you've just I was about to let you go then. I was about to wrap it up, but you've just triggered something in my mind.
Yeah.
Do you think there is an optimum structure for rugby? Or do you have a structure which you prefer in terms of what the coaches should be doing, i.e. coaching players, and then maybe what you have a director of rugby doing or a chief scout, that kind of thing?
Told you definitely that I want to be a director of rugby. I think I've a lot of thought and talked about it with people that are interested in that stuff. I think there's a place for a director of rugby because I think you've got guys now who
Right, well, after 1 hour and 3 minutes of talking continuously about rugby, Skype finally decided to give up the ghost on Ed Slater. I did try and get him back multiple times, so I've just edited this little bit back in, and sadly, we just couldn't get him back. So, me and Ed did finish off our conversation over the phone, but that's going to be between us two. So, if you want to know what he said, tough, you can't. In the meantime, though, you can follow us, you can subscribe on Twitter or subscribe on Acast, or actually just make sure you get the podcast downloaded on a weekly basis because it is important, and leave those reviews on iTunes because that, of course, is vital. If you want to follow Ed, he has got a fairly large presence on Twitter. I think he might be on Instagram too. Go follow him. Really good guy, as you can tell. One of the few professional rugby players who you get a feeling actually really loves rugby. So well worth a follow. Huge thank you to him. And of course, thank you to you guys for listening because, as I said before, I really do appreciate it. Next week, we will have someone else for you to chat about rugby. But until then, thank you for listening and goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.